Joining the Colorado Ag News Network and Farmcast Radio at this time is Troy Schneider, Colorado Corn Administrative Committee Vice President, Colorado Corn Market Development Action Team Chair, and U.S. Grains Council Delegate. We'll be discussing several issues and events and information regarding the corn industry on the national and state levels. First off, welcome back inside the barn, Troy, and thanks for taking time to visit with me.
It's good to be here, and I'm glad you take the time to get the word out for what's going on in agriculture with all that you do, Brian.
You know, according to the latest National Corn Growers Association release, nationwide they're expecting corn farmers on track to produce the second largest crop ever. Kind of good news, bad news, right?
It is. For everybody that doubts whether we can raise enough corn to take care of ethanol and our feed needs, I think the farmers are definitely stepping up to the plate all across the country with a large crop. Unfortunately, here in Colorado, we've had a lot of hail. A lot of farmers are devastated by that. But then there are areas that if you didn't receive hail, I think there's going to be some very good dry land and very good irrigated yields out there.
It seemed for a while, in Colorado at least, the corn harvest was progressing earlier than normal, but now we've hit a snag since that last moisture came through the state. And the latest report that I had from NASS Colorado, only 29% have been harvested for grain. Is that pretty much on pace? And what are you seeing out there in the fields?
Yeah, out in eastern Colorado here, southern Yuma County, southern Washington County, and around Kit Carson County, a lot of dry land has been taken out, still some dry land standing. Wet corn is pretty much wrapped up. There's a few irrigated fields that have been taken out relatively dry moisture, but there hasn't been a ton of corn taken out. I talked to Rob Barr over at the Stratton Co-op at Kirk a couple days ago, and he had just a little over 200,000 bushel brought in there. So just getting started around here with corn harvest.
You know what, speaking of corn harvest, the NASA Corn Yield Contest is underway, and harvest entry deadline is fast approaching. It's Friday, November 16th, so folks need to be paying attention to that. They'll be announcing the winners on Monday, December 17th, but then they'll also be recognizing the winners at the 2019 Commodity Classic. Hard to believe that they're already taking reservations for that.
Yes, that Commodity Classic seems to sneak up on us each year. It's going to be the end of February through the 28th of February through the 2nd of March, and it'll be a good time down in Orlando. I think Colorado Corn's taken a fairly good delegation down this year, and we're excited to go down. Looking forward to seeing the winners of the yield contest, but that's a very good program. I've only been to two of them at New Orleans and last year in Anaheim, but it's a tough time of the year to get away with sports and livestock, but make a quick trip of it and get back to Colorado.
Now, the NCGA's Corn Yield Contest, complete details and entry forms are online at ncga.com, and complete details about 2019 Commodity Classic, and this year's theme is Time to Shine, is available online at commodityclassic.com. I wanted to move to some national issues first, then we'll talk more specifically about some of the impacts here in Colorado. You know, the Farm Bill Conference Committee, that Farm Bill for 2018 is stalled right now, and both House and Senate members are on recess due to the election break. They think they may get something done during that lame duck session of Congress, but your thoughts on all of that?
No, not getting it done by the end of the fiscal year was definitely a disappointment. When it comes to programs that you mentioned, the U.S. Grains Council, some of the funding that the U.S. Grains Council gets isn't baseline, so when we roll into a continuing resolution or past the deadline on the Farm Bill, some of our funding is taken away that we work on with foreign market development and market access development programs. It definitely is disruptive there. To the farmers, it would be great to, well, we're just going to have to see how the election turns out here the 6th of November. And yeah, in the lame duck session, hopefully we can get something taken care of, because if they don't get it taken care of, and it rolls into next year, we start all over again, and that's something that we're not looking favorably upon. We need to get this done by the end of the year.
And the recent disasters, including the latest hurricane, could even complicate matters even further, as if the Farm Bill Conference Committee didn't have enough differences between the House and Senate. Now they'd be looking at a disaster package for those that suffer from that latest hurricane and other hurricanes that's just battered that southeastern part of the United States. Another issue that they're struggling with right now in some regards is trade. And the importance of trade. Kind of speak to that first, then I want to talk to you a little bit more about the NAFTA 2.0 agreement that was made with the United States, Mexico, and Canada, and then also talk about the trade war with China. From your standpoint with U.S. Grains Council and your work there, and also the Carter Corn and Carter Corn Administrative Committee, the importance of trade to Cobb's corn farmers.
Brian, with trade, you know, being here in Colorado, we don't, at least from my perspective, I didn't understand the importance of it until I got involved with Colorado Corn and the U.S. Grains Council. You know, we see everything that we raise here pretty much stays here, but once you get looking at it, you know, you look at the national numbers on the 17 corn crop. I know that's a little dated, but just, you know, they were compiled in August of 18 here and finished up. You look at the total numbers, and we're feeding, we're used 37% of our crop goes to feed. And then with fuel, ethanol, you got another 30% plus some more with the DDGs thrown in there. But then exports, you've got 13%. You think that doesn't sound like much, but then when you look at how much corn is exported in poultry, pork, beef, ethanol that goes overseas, it is an overwhelming number. And yes, we don't see our corn necessarily getting shipped down the Mississippi or out to different ports, foreign ports, but we have to help our fellow farmers in other states make sure that all that corn, we get it out of the system and we're not sitting on it. And you mentioned earlier, second largest crop on record. No, we've got to share that around the world. You know, the growth of the nation or the world on population, 95.7% of the world's population lives outside of the United States. And so whether it's shipping straight corn on ships overseas or whether we're promoting corn-fed beef and poultry and pork and getting that moved over with the U.S. Meat Export Federation, it's critical. We've got the best product in the world right there in our protein industry, and it's just very important. You know, we sometimes lose focus of that in the state of Colorado, that how important that is, getting our products across the globe and being able to do it. Yeah, we're right now in a political turmoil with trade, but I think we need to stay the course and support those organizations like the U.S. Grains Council, United States Meat Export Federation. They build these relationships, and right now they're walking hand in hand with our foreign buyers, you know, basically saying we're gonna get through this. We're gonna have a good relationship when it's all done. We'll work around any trade difficulties that we have in between our governments, and those two organizations go straight to the people and the buyers, and that's what's important.
Yeah, and we had some good news. President Trump did take a tough stance regarding tariffs with two of our trading partners, Canada and Mexico, and it was announced just earlier this month in October that they had struck a deal with the United States, Mexico, and Canada. It's called the USMCA, better known probably during the interim was NAFTA 2.0. Your thoughts on that agreement and how it might impact corn farmers, not just here in Colorado, but nationwide?
Oh, it's going to be huge. We need to, you know, first of all, when it comes to buyers, our number one buyer of corn exports from the United States is Mexico. And when you get into ethanol, Canada's right there in the top three. So those two alone, you take beef on top of it, our beef exports going to Canada and going to Mexico. It's critical that we work with those two countries where logistically that the transportation is not, I don't want to say minimal, but a lot less than it is going across the globe. And I was very happy to see that, you know, we were told that Mexico would probably be coming to the table at a certain point. We had a good idea when Canada would be there. It's a very stressful timetable as far as waiting it out and seeing the markets get hurt by the trade, but yet it's something that needed to be corrected. And yes, President Trump has delivered on getting it put back together for us and making sure that our commodities get across those borders.
One hiccup in that USMCA agreement, Troy, was Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell told Bloomberg recently that a vote on the new North American Trade Pact won't happen until next year, given the procedural steps required under the Trade Promotion Authority rules. That's probably not good news.
No, it's going to take some time. We have to have a certain amount of time where everybody can read and research what's going to be in this agreement. And then, then it has to go through all the processes of being adopted by the three countries, and time is a factor in there, and we just have to keep moving forward and keep educating not only governments but our buyers as to the pros and cons into that agreement.
In other trade news, U.S. Trade Representative Robert Lighthizer told lawmakers recently that the Trump administration plans to launch trade negotiations with the European Union and the United Kingdom and Japan early next year. The formal letters to Congress set off a 90-day countdown until USTR can begin those discussions. Now, a negative right now that's still hanging over agriculture and trade overall is that continued trade war with China. Your thoughts on that, then? Might the pressure be on China right now, and something may happen at that summit that's going to take place in, November with President Xi Jinping and President Trump?
Correct. On the timing there. So with China, my perspective, the biggest problem there is the amount of soybeans we send over to China, the pork that is sent over there. Whether you're in the pork industry or whether you're in the soybean industry, the ramifications of not having that market open to our products, it hits us all the way around. You know, the ramifications just follow. It's a trickle effect that follows into corn and into beef and everything. We need to have that market opened up. You know, I mentioned 95.7% of the world's population lives outside of the United States, and that is a heavily populated area, and we need to be able to move our products over there as quickly as we can. Although I understand where President Trump's coming from, there's some very delicate issues with outside of agriculture that has to be used and addressed, I should say. And unfortunately, agriculture is one of our largest exporters to China, so we kind of have to take the brunt on that for a little while. But I have all the confidence in the world that we'll get this put together. And just like with Mexico and Canada, I think China and the United States will come to an agreement soon.
Well, and the United States Department of Agriculture is trying to step up some help with their USDA trade mitigation aid. However, on the corn side of the equation, it wasn't very positive news with a penny per bushel on 50% production for ag producers, and especially for those producers that, like we said earlier, got hailed out or fired out or snowed out or just lost their crop due to the hurricanes, that there's no aid for them at all in this plan.
No. And you're talking to one of those farmers who on, we dissed under 600 acres of corn this year, and yet to be told that the trade aid package is going to be based on production when you had 8 irrigated circles of ground and you dissed 5 of them under and there's no production there and there's reduced production on the others, to have the government, it's a little heartburn on my side. Forgive me for getting into this point, but it's a little disheartening when they say, well, since you collected the insurance, you're not actually trying to market corn, so the market won't affect you. And it's like, now wait a minute, but my insurance price is set on market price. So it was a disappointment and a lot of heartburn. And then when they came out with the penny a bushel on 50% production, I don't want to say it was laughable, but it was just, it was very disheartening. And I understand that they have a way of figuring that, you know, with last year's price and this year's price, but I hope they're not using last year's price as a benchmark going forward, that that's where corn needs to be from now on, because it was a very low price to begin with. It's not that this year's that much better. It's just I don't agree with their logic on it, but that's just my opinion.
Hate to use the word fuzzy math, but you got to wonder how it was $1.65 for soybeans per bushel and only 14 cents per bushel for wheat producers and then a penny per bushel for corn producers, and to muddy the waters and make it probably worse. Since the USMCA got done, it just hasn't been ratified by Congress yet, Agriculture Secretary Sonia Perdue said that other 50% that was laying in the weeds may not happen at all. So let's have to see how things shake out over the next several months, that's for sure. My guest once again is Troy Schneider, Colorado Corn Administrative Committee Vice President. I wanted to also move our attention to some groundbreaking news that happened earlier this month. The recent announcement by the President of the United States, Donald Trump, regarding year-round E15 sales. Your thoughts on that?
Oh, I think that's huge, Brian. E15 sales being allowed year-round in all the states, that is huge. The next step forward, what we need to be focusing on now that it's allowed, is we have to work with, you know, the petroleum companies are coming after us, and it's no secret that we have independent gas stations out there. They're selling E15 that the independents are wonderful to work with. The unfortunate thing is a lot of the petroleum companies, a lot of the fuel stations are owned by petroleum companies, and, you know, they're kind of hand-tied as to if they can sell E15 or whether they can do it at all. So we've got to move forward. You know, we've got the announcement, and that's great, but we still have to move forward and educate the public. And I don't want to say fight a war, but we have to fight the battle with the petroleum companies as to, you know, they're telling the consumers that it's going to be, oh, the farmers got to win at the consumer's cost. No, the farmers got to win, but the consumers got to win. There's cheaper fuel out there. It's a cleaner fuel, locally grown. You just talked about fuzzy math a little bit ago. There's still a lot of fuzzy math out there on the criticisms of E15 and ethanol in general as to what it takes to produce it. You know, whether we're taking food from the livestock industry and putting it into ethanol, how that's going to affect the livestock industry. Like I said earlier, I think the American farmer, you give us a chance, you increase demand, we will increase production, and we will have enough corn to take care of everything. There's no doubt in my mind there. With just year-round E15, that we can handle that.
Getting the word out to consumers, that's the big thing, because right now the American Petroleum Institute is claiming that ethanol, as mandated in the United States fuel supply by the Renewable Fuel Standard, is ripping off consumers. They're actually purchasing op-eds and running op-eds in newspapers across the nation making those claims. So it just seems like an uphill battle. You get one thing solved with the year-round E15 sales announcement, and then these guys come out with this. But I can tell you another thing about that feed versus fuel debate that I've always talked to Mark Sponsor and others in the corn industry about is I think it sums it up pretty easy. When's the last time you ate field corn? You don't eat field corn, you eat sweet corn. So I think that sums it up right there, doesn't it?
Yep, and that is a very key factor, because when you look back, I mentioned the 2017 corn crop, the use by segments, you know, only 2% of the corn crop went into sweeteners, starches, beverages, high fructose corn syrup. You know, you've got 2%, 3%, 1% in those categories. You know, and with ethanol, when you send that corn into the ethanol plant, you know, here in Yuma County, you can watch it go in. The corn goes in, the ethanol comes out, but the distiller's grain, the DDGs, comes out, and it goes to the feedlots and the cow-calf producers that are buying it and feeding it through the winter. It's just an incredible thing to see that, they think we're taking it totally out of the feed production side of the equation, and whether it be feed to the cattle for human consumption later on, we're not taking it out. And like you said, it was a very good point. You know, the sweet corn is a whole other issue. The corn plant is a very vivid, robust thing to look at out in the field. And, some consumers look at it and think, well, that's what I'm eating. That's sweet corn, you know, or that's edible corn. No, that's not going onto your dinner plate. It's going onto your dinner plate in the form of pork and beef and poultry. We're not taking it off of anybody's dinner plate. Let's put it that way. We're just changing how we're feeding it to those animals.
Wanted to visit with you just real quick here. Anything new on the renewable fuel standard from the EPA, or even on the renewable identification number or RIN credits that you wanted to make mention of?
We just have to keep our eye on that. You know, you talked about Commodity Classic a little earlier. Last year when we were in Anaheim, a year ago at this time, I don't think anybody could tell you what RINs, RIN, stood for. slowly over the next few months as we built up going into Commodity Classic, we sure learned what the RINs credit were all about with to the refiners back east and across the country. It's critical that the renewable fuel standard, it's been passed more than once with different parties in control of different houses and senates at the time. We have to defend it. We have to protect it. We fought hard for it. It's good for the American, not just the American farmer, but the American consumer in general, putting money back into rural America by promoting our product and trying to move the needle a little bit, inch by inch, on moving toward renewable fuels.
Once again, my guest, Troy Schneider, Colorado Corn Administrative Committee Vice President. Wanted to get your thoughts real quick about the National Corn Growers Association's Take the Pledge campaign, because like we said earlier, most consumers don't know how their food is grown either.
No, they don't. They, you know, the organic, the non-GMO talk out there, there's a lot of misconceptions, a lot of misinformation being put out. You can go to standupforcorn.com and take the pledge with NCGA. It's just an ongoing struggle, and it's just part of our daily life now is to reaching out, whether it's through taking the pledge, NCGA's work with Common Ground, reaching out to people that are making decisions on a daily basis as to what to feed their family and where their food's coming from. No, we're not trying to poison anybody. We're not trying to do detriment to anybody just for a profit. We are very proud of our product, and whether it's in the grain form or whether it's in the, you know, the livestock industry, we're trying to produce the most safe and abundant food that we can.
This action couldn't have came at a better time. If you want to be an advocate, stand up with National Corn Growers Association and Colorado Corn Growers Association on social media and Stand Up for Corn, please visit standupforcorn.com, and you can take the pledges there. Now, another big organization that you guys help, it's actually a small organization, but you guys have made it into a big one by helping them monetarily and also by volunteering, the All-American Beef Battalion Steaks for Troops campaign. What's the latest on that? And they kind of wrapping up the year, or are they going to go into the winter with some of these?
We've got on the calendar December 15th. The Beef Battalion will have a feed at Fort Carson. And Mike LaFever, corn farmer from up in the retired firefighter from up in the Longmont area, he's on our board. He has been the point person for the All-American Beef Battalion. I know in visiting with him in the last few weeks, they had a feed the 15th of September in Castle Rock for 180 people. The 22nd of September, they had a feed in Fort Carson for returning soldiers for 650 people. And in early September, Mike had a chance to travel out to Scott Air Force Base in St. Louis, Missouri. And the Illinois Corn Association, I think Missouri's taking part in it too. They both pitched in and stepped up to the plate. They're seeing what Mike has done with Colorado Corn and the All-American Beef Battalion. You know, we're pretty proud. If you go on to their website, the Beef Battalion's website, and look at the photos from Flickr and different things and their Facebook account, we didn't ask them to do it. It was just through our donations. They decided to put a cooker together. You know, one of the cookers has Superior Livestock on it, K-State Wildcat logo. There's a Colorado corn cooker.
That's awesome.
The green and gold, a little bit of CSU colors there, but it's Colorado corn, and that travels all over the country and gets pulled around to just say thank you to those men and women who have served our country.
You bet. That's the All-American Beef Battalion Steaks for Troops campaign. If you would like to help, you can do so. Just visit steaksfortroops.com and check out the Facebook and Flickr pages that Troy was mentioning. Another upcoming event that Colorado Corn and the Colorado Corn Administrative Committee has put in together is an annual meeting. It'll be in Greeley December 5th. I know we don't have a lot of details on that, but folks need to be thinking about making plans to attend that, right?
Yes. We're going to change things up this year. The last 2 years we've been out in eastern Colorado. We were in Yuma 2 years ago at the end of 2016 and Burlington the end of 2017. And this year we decided to go back to Greeley. We're going to be using one of the new hotels downtown Greeley. there's a room block there. I think Ann and the staff at Colorado Corn have done a really good job putting together the room block. Good pricing for people who want to come in. They get a hold of the corn office and visit with staff, and we can help you with hotel rooms if you're coming in. We're going to have the annual meeting on December 5th. We're changing things up a little bit, where we're on our own again, not working with the Ag Classic like we were a few years ago. We don't have everything set in stone yet, but we're working on bringing some speakers in during the annual meeting, not during the dinner. It'll be in the afternoon. We hope to hear from Southwest Ag Council, which the Colorado Corn Growers are deeply involved with, a lobbying organization that speaks up on behalf of farmers in the Southwest United States. Dave Keir, Jeff Self are board members there, deeply involved with it. We don't have a hard commitment yet, but I think we'll have somebody here from U.S. Grains Council. And then if scheduling works, we're hoping to have Lynn Chris from Hastings, Nebraska, NCGA president here, but it all depends on his busy schedule and the work that he has to do on behalf of NCGA. So we're trying to move that up in the afternoon, have them speak during the annual meeting while we do business, maybe have a little roundtable discussion, Q&A, as to what these organizations represent, why it's important to have Colorado Corn involved with them, and then we'll move on to the evening's events and hand out some awards that we normally hand out, recognize some businesses and some individuals that have done an outstanding job for Colorado and Colorado Corn this year. And then in the evening, on a positive note, with some entertainment and enjoy the what is the holiday season, the Christmas season right there after what's been a challenging year for most everybody in agriculture in Colorado.
That's a good way to put it. Looking forward to getting more information and sharing more information about the annual meeting of the Colorado Corn Growers Association, the Colorado Corn Administrative Committee. That'll be in downtown Greeley at the Doubletree Hotel on December 5th, and we'll get that information out to you as soon as we get it. You know what? Ballots have already came in the mail. I've got mine for the elections, which is November 6th. That's the deadline. Are there any ballot measures or amendments or bond measures that Colorado Corn wants to make mention of right now?
I think the most important thing is get out and vote. I think most everybody out there that's listening, you know, whether it's 112, a few others, they're hot topic issues, hot button issues. You know, we need to make sure that every vote is cast. I don't want to pick on our brethren in the front range, but we have an uphill battle. You know, when you think about it, it was brought to my attention this year. When you look at congressional districts, you know, Colorado number one, Diana DeGette, you know, there's as many people in the city and county of Denver to give her that one seat as there is in Colorado four for Congressman Buck in almost all of eastern Colorado. And it just, wow. Everybody in rural Colorado, agriculture, I don't know what other thing to say except for just make sure you mail those ballots in, take them in, drop them off, fill them out. Just make sure your voice is heard.
Be educated, get informed, yep, and cast your vote with agriculture in mind. That would be my suggestion as well. I know we've covered a lot, Troy, but any final thoughts before I let you go?
Yeah, like you said, we covered a lot of ground today. I appreciate your time and your work. On getting the information out there as to what Colorado Corn's up to and what agriculture is facing, not only within the state, but on a national level and international level at this time.
Thanks to my guest once again, Troy Schneider, Colorado Corn Administrative Committee Vice President, Colorado Corn Market Development Action Team Chair, and U.S. Grains Council Delegate. Appreciate your time very much. If you want to learn more about the work that Colorado Corn and the Colorado Corn Administrative Committee does, you can check out the website at colorado corn.com.